Let's just take a moment.
Sahanavavatu, sahanaubhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Start on this page 6.
Nitya nitya vastu viveka. Nitya nitya vastu
viveka. Kaha.
Nitya vastrekam brahma.
Nitya vastrekam brahma. Tatvayatiriktam sarvamanityam
ayameva
nityanitya vastu vivekah.
There's a typo here. It should be, okay, see, it's the second word that says nitya vastvaikam brahma. Fine. But then it should be tad vyatireka, vya. So you have to make a little correction there. Mm-hmm. So there's a conjunct. Usually in making that conjunct, the ya, in the Sanskrit, the letter ya. Well, if you don't know Sanskrit, just take the a out. Vaya. It should be vya.
Yeah.
And for the Sanskrit, mm-hmm. you can just bring, with the that yakara there, you just bring the ya down a little bit so it's open. There's an opening between the top line and the ya, so it's pulled down a little bit. Vyatireka. Okay. So here we go again. Where it said, if you go back to the previous page, what is the sadhana chaturshtiyam? Sadhana Chaturshtiyam Kim. And then he lists the Nitya Vastu, Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivekaha, etc. He goes through and lists each one. But now, having listed each one, right, he now asks, okay, what is that? So we start out with the Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivekaha. So if you see here in the page 6, top of page 6, it goes Nitya Anitya vastu vivekaha kaha. Kaha means what? It's in the nominative accusative, nominative singular. And masculine nominative singular. And so you're going to see kaha instead of kim. If you see kim, that's because it's a neuter noun. Kaha is because it's a masculine noun. Still means what? What is nitya anitya vastu viveka? Okay. So we actually have talked a little bit about that, but he defines it then in the next line. So the answer, so what is nitya anitya vastu viveka? What is this discriminative analysis between a nitya vastu and an anitya vastu? And nitya is free from time, anitya is time bound. Okay. Vastu is Brahman really, but in samsara and within duality, it's anything that appears to be an object until you analyze it. Once you analyze it, you see that it's just a conglomerate of quarks. You might even smaller than atoms. You can't find it. You can't find the object because it goes in, that division within time and space goes into infinite regress. That's Maya. There's no end to it. Yeah. Maya, there's no beginning, there's no end to any type of division. It's amazing. But as long as it takes up space, it's divisible. As long as it takes up time, it's divisible. Yeah. One moment is divisible into an infinite number of moments. So, yeah. So we'll be seeing all that, but just to contextually, you know, define it. So here, let's look at the definition. Nitya vastu. Nitya vastu ekam brahma. For the Sundays, for Sanskrit students, nitya vastu, that vastu ends in an u, ekam begins with an a. So u plus a is ve, where the u takes its semi-vowel equivalent, va. So u plus a is ve. So nitya vastu ekam brahma. So he says, the nitya vastu is ekam, is only one. There is only one thing, which is nitya, which is free from time. And that one vastu, which is timeless, is what? Is Brahman. Brahman is not an object because... Oh, never mind. that's too big of a because right now. Okay, we'll just do the definition. Nitya vastu ekam brahma. Brahma actually comes from the root br. Yeah? And br means that which is big or that which expands, that which is big. Brahman, the Brahman is that which is, so imagine from br to like grow, expand. Brahma is that which is big. So Swamiji will say, well, big. Big is like an adjective, you know? Like you could have, well, that's a really big mosquito. Or you can have, that's a really big tree. Or that's a really big mountain. And so here, this big is a noun. It's not an adjective. So that which is big means that which there is nothing bigger is the idea. Brahman is that which is infinite. If something is big, Brahman is bigger. If something is huge, the whole creation, there's the whole creation, Brahman is bigger than that. Of course, when you get down to it, Brahman has no size at all. It's non-dual. And because it's non-dual, time and space exist having Brahman as its basis. And for instance, if you have an imagine, just understand what we mean by big is infinite. There is nothing outside of it. It includes everything. And itself is independent of everything. So there's nothing more than that. But with Brahman, we're talking about something which is one without a second. And so we'll be getting in depth into the meaning of that. But just to give a drishtanta, an illustration. If you have an imagination, any vritti actually, but just say if you have an imagination, that imagination is sustained completely by you. You, the conscious being that you are its what we call adhishtana. Adhishtana means the thing, this thing depends totally on you for its being, for its existence, for its knownness. The adhishtana is what something that we call mitya. So mitya is going to be a big word that is coming quickly. Yeah. the mithya, this creation, is called mithya because it has no being apart from you. Your imagination comes from you, it's sustained by you, it resolves into you. It has no being of its own. You can't take the imagination away from your being any more than you can take the snake, the imagined snake, away from a rope. The rope which is its adhishtana. It is its truth. So Brahman is the adhishtana. It is what is actually here. And so anything that is here depends upon Brahman for its being. So anything from the whole creation depends upon Brahman for its being, for its knownness. And everything within the creation also depends upon Brahman for its being, for its knownness. Just like in your imagination, the entire imagination can't walk off and go on a little side trip on its own. Right? It 100% depends upon you for its being. It has no separate reality at all. So that's why we call it Maya. Ya ma iti maya. It has no being of its own. So when we say that this Brahman itself, you know, is that which is infinite. There is nothing more than that. But we use, instead of infinite, because it has all kinds of different connotations, we say non-dual. When you say infinite, it can go on forever. You know, it can have many, many parts. If you say non-dual, there is nothing else. Non-dual means it is one without a second. There is no second thing. And so it's in this whole creation of duality, does not count as a second. It's not Brahman and this creation. Just like it's not the rope and the snake. There are two orders, different orders of reality. The snake has no being at all. If I take the rope away, there is no snake. It, all the bends of the rope are the bends of the snake. The length of the rope is the length of the snake. So like that, this whole creation is not a second thing, because it has no independent existence, no independent being. Your body, mind, sense organs are included in this creation. This creation has no independent existence. Your body has no independent existence. Your mind has no independent existence. There is nothing about you that has an independent existence except for one thing, which is being itself. That being itself is the ekam, ekam vastu, ekam brahman. So here, the nitya vastu is one alone, which is brahman. Now, just to understand nityam again in reference to brahman, why does brahman get to be nityam and nothing else? Why does brahman get to be the one, the non-dual, one timeless thing that there is? Because Brahman is not an object in the creation. Any object within time and space is time-bound, because there is nothing in the creation that is free from time, is free from rajas. In that perspective, the whole creation is a display of sattva, rajas, and tamas. The whole creation enjoys sattva, knownness, consciousness, reflects consciousness. It is in perpetual motion. It is rajas. There is nothing that is not changing in the creation. As small as you go, there's activity. You know, as small as you go, as big as you go, there's activity. That is the rajas aspect of the creation. And then tamas, everything has the capacity of going through this process of grossification. We'll see all that in detail. To become a namarupa, which you name and form, which you can perceive through your sense organs. Right? And so this is what makes up the creation. And so all objects and the creation itself is in perpetual motion. Because it's in perpetual motion, you can mark time. You must mark time. Without change, there's no time. Right? So imagine now, so that which is free of time, free of space. If you imagine a creation or whatever the imagination, and you know, you imagine yourself walking, you know, in the forest. Whatever the imagination, that imagination has its own space and its own time. The space and time belong to the imagination. They don't exist outside of the imagination, so there's some space out there. You throw this imagination into the space that's already there, and there's time there also. No. The time and space, the space, air, fire, water, earth, all of the elementals, all of the jivas, all of the activity, all exist in that imagination. And when the imagination is withdrawn, the time is withdrawn, the space is withdrawn, all of the activity is withdrawn, subject-object with relationship is withdrawn, all of that exists within the duality, within the samsara, within the time-space imagination, right? So like that here, everything that we experience from space to time to all of the elements to all of our subject-object relationships, all of us, all exist within duality. But the adhishtana, the truth, the being, the sat-chit, the conscious being, the conscious being which is Brahman, is the adhishtana for that. And so there is a basis for this creation that is its truth. As opposed to thinking, there is no basis for this creation. At the bottom of everything is only non-existence. That means if that we inquire like peeling an onion, you peel the onion, peel the onion, peel the onion, peel the onion at the bottom, there's no onion and there's nothing else either. But you can actually never get there in reality. You know, because no matter what you're doing, you are always there. Even if you were to imagine non-existence, even if you were to peel the onion, even if you were to be a scientist and take things apart, take things apart, take things apart, your being is always there. You can never remove conscious being from the experience, ever, at any time. And that conscious being is the adhishtana. So no matter how much you dissect the universe, what is left always is the conscious being which remains as the constant. You can kind of understand this experientially, like if you have, say Swamiji sometimes will use the clay pot as an example in a different way. So if I have a clay pot, right, and the clay pot is and it is known. That's the sat-chit conscious being. It is and it is known. I drop the pot, and now there is no clay pot. It's gone. But now there are clay shards. These are chips. And the clay shards, they are, and they are known. Right? And now those shards, I smash up into dust. And now the shards are gone, but the clay dust is, and it is known. I dissect the shards with my instruments, with my microscope, and now I get into smaller and smaller units like molecules and atoms and quarks, and those, they are and they are known. The invariable, always in all of your experience, in all objects, in all birth, modification, and death, is that it is and it is known. That is the invariable of all experience. It is your invariable. It is you. It is your invariable. It is not something that is objectifiable. It is the rope of the snake. I am the rope of the snake, in that all my experience come into being and go out of being. I am the being in which all experiences come into and out to. Out of. I am the invariable. And that invariable is the knownness which time itself and change itself enjoys. That one, it is one because it's not an object within time and space, so it can't be two. You know, you can't divide something that's free of space. You can't change something that's free of time. And so it is one without a second, which is called Brahman. And that one vastu, it is the one vastu because it's indivisible. It's not a conglomerate. It is the one vastu that is free of time. So the nitya vastu, that which actually is, that vastu, which is timeless, is one alone. And that one we call Brahman. So Nitya Vastu Ekam, one, Brahman. The Nitya Vastu is one, and that oneness is Brahman. So then he says, Tad Vyatiriktam Sarvam Anityam. He says, Tad Vyatiriktam. Other than that, differentiated, distinguished from that, in English you just say, is other than that, Tad Vyatiriktam Sarvam Anityam. Sarvam means everything other than that one vastu that we call Brahman is anityam. So just think, in other than that one vastu which is Brahman, everything else is anitya. Because as soon as you say everything else, you are within time and space. And within time and space, there is continual change. Continual change means bound by time. Anitya means that which is bound by time. So everything, tad vyatiriktam, other than tad, that, tat, I break the sandhi, tad vyatiriktam, other than that, sarvam, everything other than that, anityam, is anitya, time bound. So then he says, ayam eva, this, ayam means ayam this, eva indeed, this indeed is nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. So now, if you remember before here, vakshamaha, we will tell you, we will teach you the prakaram, the method for that tattva viveka. That tattva viveka is the viveka which is defined here, nitya anitya vastu viveka, where the nitya is the ekam brahma, nitya ekam brahma, and everything other than that is anitya. That is what we have to recognize. I need my hat.
Yeah. Thank you.
Maybe we can hang this.
Or maybe I can, you won't be able to see me very well, but I could sit on the ground maybe.
I think there's enough.
How come this wasn't this way yesterday? Oh, we didn't have the sun out.
Yeah.
Well, that's why. Do we have
a chair? Okay.
Do we have tape? I've got tape in my room.
You can get on my back.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, there's two.
Is this good?
Yeah. How can you get it? Oh, I see what you're doing.
Thank you.
It works.
And then we can. Do you want to move it more this way?
Yeah, just right there. Yeah, just tape it right there and just over just a little bit. It'll be fine.
Perfect.
Like
you don't want to be.
Oh, how boring.
I know, it's not that boring.
Can I wear a tutu while I'm going?
Yeah, you don't need to need that much. It's fine. That's all we need.
That's good.
I put this here in case we need more than.
Yeah. Okay. Much better. I'm starting to have little beads of sweat. It's starting to roll down into my eyes. Okay, so on the page 4 at the top, you see Tattva Viveka Prakaram Vakshamaha. We are going to teach you the Prakaram, the methodology for this Tattva Viveka, for this discrimination of what is real, what is the truth. And so that viveka now has been defined for you as nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. And so the teaching the Vedanta teaching as a means of knowledge has to take you step by step by step to the discrimination of your, to a discrimination of the experience that you are having right now. There's not going to be some self out there that you discover to be yourself. The self actually that you take yourself to be right now is the self that you discover to be Brahman. It's not another self. That's why it's not a it's a great surprise. But the surprise is that I, the me that has always been here, is Brahman. And that I had believed, of course, because of beginningless ignorance, that this body which enjoys me, I pervade this body as its very adhishtana, just like the rope pervades the snake. Of course, the snake takes itself to have three bends and to be all of that. But in reality, the only thing that is there is the rope. Reality, the only thing that is here is the one Ekam Brahman, which is me, the me that I have taken to be this limited body, mind, sense organs. That is the wonderful discovery. It's not the discovery, it's not that there is some infinite Ekam Brahman out there which I have to have a meditative experience of, and then somehow the little me has to dissolve itself into that Ekam Brahman. You know? But what happens? I don't want to dissolve it. I want to be, I want to know who I am, not who some Brahman out there is. But the Upanishads is about who you are, the me, the person that is here right now. You think about it, even when we are doing a meditation, we do a meditation and you let everything become quiet and relaxed, and we turn our attention toward myself, not toward someone else, toward the me that is here. Who is remaining after I silence everything. The only reason that we're silencing all of this and bringing it into a state of relaxation, because it gives you a little space to recognize yourself without all the noise. All the noise of all of the thoughts in your mind and all the perceptions, all the emotions and all this. You just, you know, relax that for a while so that you can recognize, you know, I'm the one who is here present to all of this. Then if viveka starts to take place, a discrimination between me, who is here and always here, and the noise, means all the perceptions, all the thoughts, all the emotions. And remember at the meditation that we did, I suggested that when you go outside and just take a quiet walk, yeah, and see if you can recognize that nothing has happened to you. Nothing. Zero. That was Ramana's huge discovery. Ramana Maharshi, he felt until he gained knowledge, which took about 2 seconds of pundits talking to him. He realized that myself, whether my eyes are open, whether my mind is thinking, whatever experiences are passing through, nothing happens to me. I don't go away at all. Nothing happens. I don't have, whether I have my eyes open or closed, whether I'm thinking or not thinking, nothing happens to me. In fact, whether this emotion wafts through or this emotion comes through or it's a rainy, cloudy day, as Swamiji always says, and a thunderstorm is taking place, nothing happens to me. Just like nothing happens to the sun in a great thunderstorm. The sun is fine. It's just illuminating the thunderstorm, that's all. But it is its own experience. And I am always, always my own experience. Nothing covers me at all. The thunderstorms don't cover the sun. Maybe from the one standing on the beach or whatever. They can't see the sun. But you're the sun. Right? Somebody standing on the beach is like the mind, you know, looking through the experience and feeling limited, the mind that feels the limitation of the experience. But the self has no limitation. It's illumining the experience, just like the sun. There's no problem at all. So as the story goes, when Ramana recognized, you know, this, then there was really no need to meditate because he was never not that. He was never not meditating. Actually, the point of meditation is yourself. You know, it's the mind just becomes quiet, so it's out of the way. But the one who is the one that you're seeking is the one that is ever present, illuminating whatever is taking place. So you realize that completely, and then we just walk around and have his life and sit quietly in front of his devotees and in front of his students and say, just, who am I? You ask, who am I? He had his own methodology. It's a beautiful thing to recognize that no matter what is happening, nothing is happening to me. Zero, nothing. No matter what goes on in your imagination, it can be, or your nightmare, you know, it can be totally wild and crazy, nothing happens to you. No. From the standpoint of the characters you're identified with, all kinds of stuff is happening, but when you wake up from that dream, you know, nothing has happened at all. Nothing has ever happened. Here, we don't have to wake up from the dream, which would kind of mean like dying or something, to wake up. This is not our imagination. We're you know, within the imagination. But you can recognize here itself the tremendous beauty and freedom that you are in. No one, so much you go, no one, not even Ishwara, can do anything about it. Because that is Ishwara's truth also. Yeah, so very beautiful. So that is nitya, anitya vastu viveka. Huh? Let's do the next one. Why don't you do the just next two lines, Sharda?
Viragaha, viragaha,
viragaha,
iha svarga,
iha svarga,
bhogeshvichara hityam,
bhogeshvichara hityam.
So, viraga kaha, the second one, viraga or vairagya, okay? So first one of the sadhana, from the sadhana, chatushtaya, first one is viveka nitya anitya vastu viveka. Your mind says viveka, what is viveka nitya anitya vastu viveka? You have to know that little phrase, okay? Then what is vairagya? So here, viraga kaha, masculine noun, nominative singular, so viraga kaha, okay? What is viraga? So he says, let's look at the sandhi here. Iha swarga bogeshu. Here it's u plus e becomes v, semi-vowel equivalent va for u. So iha swarga bogeshu ikcha rahityam. Rahityam, okay? Rahityam, this again is an abstract noun taking the yakara. Rahityam, the state of being, the condition of being free from. Rahityam, icha rahityam, the state of being free from or being without, being devoid of, icha, desire. Icha is desire. And so you say, iha, desire what? Desire. Iha means here, here, iha, here, here in this world. Swarga means there in heaven. Swarga is like Satyaloka, Swargaloka. It's the highest. So say people are saying the other day, people work for their whole life doing prayers and upasanas and rituals and dhanam giving and charities and following dharma. Whole life is devoted to that so they can get to the Swargaloka. So what is viraga? It's the absence, being devoid of, being free from, being without desire, that state of being without icha, desire, in reference to what? That's the iha swarga bhogeshu. So it takes the locative. You are free from desire, but free from desire in reference to what? So here, toward, you have no desire of, in English we would just say for, the bhogas, for the enjoyments. To have the enjoyments, you can say the enjoyments, we say, you can say the experience, positive experiences, because we don't really have a desire for the negative ones. So a desire for those, for those enjoyments here or in Swarga. So that stands for all of the lokas up, all of the worlds up, where there's a lot of pleasure to be had. More and more, every loka, you have more, it's more subtle. And there's less what we call pratibandhakas. There's less obstructions. And so the mind more and more is like a clean, shiny mirror reflecting the self. So with each loka, you have more ananda, more experience of ananda. So let me have those experiences. I live for gaining better, higher and higher lokas so I can have more and more sukha. So I'm working for sukha, and the ultimate sukha is that pleasure is in that swarga loka. Or let me become wealthy, let me have power, let me have many children. These are the main bogus, you know. Let me have a big family, let me have a lot of power, let me have a lot of money, you know. And then everything will be fine. Of course, it needs to be a lot of money, and the money has to be protected. Artha kama, you know. And the children all have to be very healthy, and they have to live long lives. In fact, they have to live healthy, long lives. They should be very beautiful, very beautiful, very, very intelligent, you know. They should be well-loved by all beings, you know. It's true. They should be well-loved, you know. And they should have a beautiful, beautiful life, blessed by Bhagavan. Let no ill ever come to them, as in the children. You know, and let me be respected. You know, that's the power. Let me be respected. Even at this power, sometimes even has in the Rakshasa world. Let people fear me. Let them respect me. Let them fear me. You know, let me be the Lord, the Rakshasa Lord. Are these people. So that's the power is actually pretty egotistical. All of these things become problematic. So, you know, let's just go back. Let me unwind here. Let me be free of desire, really, for the purusharthas, just to make it really simple. Instead of wanting security, let me be free of insecurity. Instead of wanting kama, you'd be free of that desire. Instead of wanting to have improve, let me be free of that need. So, the one who in this world, with all of the things that we can attain, the one who is not tricked by all of that, you know, one who is free from all of that. In the Katha Upanishad, there is the story of Nachiketas, who was in a moment of irritation. His father so irritated with him because he was asking his father was performing a ritual in which everything needs to be given away. Absolutely everything is given away and offered to the priests and the brahmanas. And so he's giving away everything, all his old, including all his old cows who couldn't produce any milk anymore, everything, even the old cows. But he wasn't giving Nachiketas, his son, away. And so Nachiketas was very concerned about this because unless he was given away also, then his father's ritual would not be successful, you know, because he had given everything away. It's a huge ritual. And his father, he asked him, and his father kind of blew him off. And he asked him again, and then he asked him a third time, and his father was really irritated, maybe because he thought maybe that he's right. But no, you're not, just be quiet, don't talk. We'll just give everything away except for you, okay? But Nachiketa still would not let it go. And so his father really got irritated. He said, okay, go to Lord Yama then. Go to Yama. Yama is Lord Death. Just go to Yama, you know. And it was a shock. But Satyamvada is the highest, one of the very highest values, you know, in terms of Dharma, Satyamvada. May you always speak the truth. This came up also in the Ramayana, you know, because the Rama's father had made a vow to his wife, and when his wife called in the boon was that Rama leave the kingdom and let her son, you know, Bharata, become king. And the father was devastated because he had made, that is what he had promised to Kaikeyi, Father was devastated and refused. And Mama said, no, you have to. You have to, because that was your vow. That is what you said. You have to fulfill it. And so Rama made all of the preparations to go, in spite of the heartbreak of his father, because you can't go back on your word. And Nachiketas, the little 12-year-old boy, went through that same horror. He didn't want his father to break this most sacred vow that what you say must be true. He said, Father, I must go. Because his father said, no, I didn't mean it. No, I have to go. That's what you said. So he went up to Lord Yama. You know? And Yama wasn't around when he got there. Yama had gone off on a trip. He's going to be gone for 3 days. And so Nachiketas had to wait for 3 days outside. He couldn't go into his place. He waited outside of Yama's place for 3 days. And Nachiketas was a brahmana, you know. And so the wrath of the brahmana, Nachiketas, and the Lord Yama did not want to experience that. And so he came with all humility and said, I'm so sorry that I was gone for these 3 days. For each day that I was gone, I will give you a boon. And so Nachiketas took him up on that and told him the three boons. One was that his father would be happy and would not be hurt by all that has happened, and would think well of him, and that he would be able to see his father again. That was his first boon. His father would have Shanti. The second was that there should be a ritual which would allow all of the jivas who wanted to go to Swargaloka, the famous ritual, Nachiketa Agni. So that was the second boon. Yeah, fine. Nachiketa and Yama was so happy to give those two boons, and even threw in an extra boon, you know. Well, because of those, he threw in just a nice extra boon, some sort of a necklace which contained all types of rituals. Okay, and now it's time for the third boon, and Nachiketa said, "I want to know what happens when I die. What happens to me? Is there anything beyond the birth and death? Is there anything that exists beyond a dharma, beyond sukha and dukkha? What is the truth of me? You are the one that would know this. You are the one. Who else would know better than you? You're the Lord of death. You are the one that would know this." And Yama thought, oh no, this is too much. This is too much for you. Even the gods themselves, you know, may want to know this. They themselves don't know. The gods, devatas, they themselves don't know this. This is too much for you to understand. And so the Nachiketas stood his ground. But then Yama started offering everything imaginable. Like, I will give you beautiful, beautiful women who are playing beautiful music on their instruments. I'll give you the vehicles, unimaginable vehicles. I'll give you long life. He went on and on, offering, I'll give you overlordship of all kingdoms. He went on and on, offering everything that one can imagine that a person who's a samsari may want. And every single time, so you have it immediately, too. You don't have to wait. And you have a long, healthy life. Everything. Your children will be healthy. Everything he went through, verse after verse, offering these. And Nachiketas had no interest that, you know, this rahityam, this icha rahityam was there. He did not want that. So it wasn't, in Shankara says in his Bhashya on this, what Shankara says is, his mind just remained silent like a clear lake. Nothing happened. You know, you could think, here's this beautiful clear lake, but Yama keeps throwing these, you know, these rocks in it. But no, nothing happened. His mind just remained clear like a silent, quiet lake. And so finally, Yama ran out of things to offer. And then he was so pleased. He said, okay, I'll teach you that. Because that adhikaritvam was there. You know, he had no doubt. Yunus, the young boy, just a young boy. But still he knew very clearly what he wanted. And he was under no illusions, none of these things, whether in heaven worlds or in the whole. Well, he offered everything that could be offered. Nothing happened in Nachiketas. There was no temptation there at all. Okay, you're an Abhikari. So, Iha, here, or in Swarga, Bogeshu. All of the enjoyments that could be found in Swarga Loka, or here, and here, Icha Rahityam. That absence, being devoid of any type of Icha. Icha means desire for these things. That is Viraga. Vairagya. The reason we have that vairagya to a good enough degree is because of the viveka. Because I recognize that, and even Nachiketa says, all my senses will just burn out. I'll be enjoying all of these things, but I'll get old, the senses will just burn out. And then where am I? Yeah, he knew very clearly. So we have this vairagya to a degree in these sadhana, chatushtaya, all of these, including the vairagya, the viraga, becomes whole, complete, only really with self-knowledge. Because with self-knowledge, you have what you seek. Until you have self-knowledge, you realize that what you have out here in terms of the things that you desire to go after will not give you what you are seeking. So that's a negative expression of dispassion. Things out here will not, because of your fault, because you're stupid or something, but because of the very nature of the creation, they cannot and will not give you what you're seeking. And so there's a dispassion here. But the viraga, the vairagya of the jnani is I don't need anything. I don't want anything because I have everything I want. Why would I want ananda when I am the ananda? There's a beautiful verse in the Bhagavad Gita that says, you know, imagine, this is what they do in India. They build wells right in the middle of the rivers which become dry in the summer. That's where they'll put the well. Because in the winter when the rain comes, you know, that well will be right in the middle of the river, and so you know that water will have seeped deeply into the aquifers underneath. So that's the safest place, really, to build a well, you know. But then, in the summer, that well is useful and available. But when the rains come and the river is running, you know, say you come to get your water, are you going to wade into the middle of the river, you know, to find the well so that you can have your water? You know, who would do that? You know, the water well is already totally covered with water. So you just get the water from the river and you go. You don't say, no, I can't take the water from the river. I have to go into the middle and try to find the well and then take the water from that spot. You don't think like that, you know. So say you have the ananda that you seek. Where are you going to go out to try to fulfill some sort of a desire, to have some sort of a shantavritti, so that you can have a little experience of ananda for a short period of time, when in fact your mind, the mind itself, has for its very being the ananda that you seek? It doesn't have to go anywhere. The mind traipsing out to fill this desire, fill that desire, when the ananda is there as my very being, which is the very adhishtana, the very truth of the mind. And so for the jnani, the mind is, as there's no distance between the mind and the ananda. Yeah. So it's not that ignorance which causes that misapprehension like that, is just simply not there. So I am with myself. I am myself, and from the standpoint of the buddhi, I am with myself. Where is there any reason for the icha, for the desire? So any desire, really, as your mind matures in your knowledge, any desire that you have comes along with the prarabdha karma. I want this but not so that I can be happy. I want this because that desire has arisen. You know? The prarabdha karma are the karmas that have taken you through your life from birth to death. Those are the karmas that give you this life experience that you have now. But what makes you, in the prarabdha as it unfolds, what makes you move? Desire is the reason that you move. You know, I move to get a glass of water because I'm thirsty. I want a glass of water. I move to go to bed because I'm tired. It's time to go to bed. I have a desire to go to bed. Whatever. Just think of whatever you're doing. It's because this is what you want to do. So these desires are coming and coming and coming and coming continually, positive and negative. That's part of the prarabdha karma. Otherwise, you wouldn't move at all. But these desires, so that means that the desires for Ajnani, as let alone an Ajnani, they are not going to go away. It's not like you become one who has no desire. So raise your right hand. I have no desire. Get off the chair. No, all desires are functioning well and functioning, but they are bija dagdas. Bija means a seed, or dagda bija we say usually. Dagda means that which is burnt. They're burnt seeds. They don't amount to anything. In other words, if the desire, for all of us, all samsaris, if your desire is fulfilled, all is well. You got a shanta vritti, I can enjoy that for some time, no problem. But it's when the desire is not fulfilled that all problems start. Starts with krodha, anger starts with, this includes the whole negative spectrum of disappointment. You know? So that is a problem. So last in, for those of you who were in at Mangalam for chapter 4, you know, it's all about chapter 3 and chapter 4 actually. It's all about these non-binding desires. For Jnani, the desires are there, but they're non-binding. So I have a desire, an inclination to do this. I want to do this. But my ananda is not at stake. That means you're free. You go after the desire, whatever it is, but you're also free of the desire. It's called a non-binding desire. The Jnani has non-binding desires. It's really important to understand this because otherwise you're walking around kind of like a zombie. Don't want a desire from, don't want a desire. But that's so silly because you have to kind of be lying to yourself, you know, because you can't even move to get a glass of water without a desire, you know. You couldn't come here without a desire. Yeah, everything we do, all the trips you take, the jobs you have, the marriages you have, the children you have, it go on and on and on. There's desire involved there, you know. But for Jnani, it's non-binding. It's all part of Ishwara. And so you appreciate the energy of desire, but you're not bound by the desire. It's important. So that when it says, Iha swarga bhogeshu icha rahityam, there's the absence of that binding desire. The desires of the prarabdha karma will be there. You know? In the prarabdha karma, there's three desires, three types, three categories of desires that keep the prarabdha karma flowing. The first one is called anyecha. The desire, the icha, anya, icha, plus e is a, anyecha. The desire, your desire that rises comes from another person. Another person needs you to do something. They pull you into that action. Another one is anicca, anicca. It's nobody's desire. It's Ishwara. It's what's going on in the creation. Like the floods, like the hurricanes, like the volcanoes. It's not that somebody wants, oh, come on, let's have this volcano. You find yourself in that situation. It's Ishwara. You know, that's anicca. It's nobody's desire. It's what is happening in the creation. Your prarabdha is stuck in the middle of that, good and bad. Okay? But the third one that people don't realize is swecha. Swa-icha. Swecha. That's your own desire. Means it arises up inside of you. You know. Swamiji when he, I think actually it was in his mid-60s at some point, Swamiji was ready to go up to Rishikesh to his Kutir, beautiful little ashram there, small little ashram on the banks of the Ganga. And he was ready to retire. He had taught for so many courses. He had so many students who were jnanis and great teachers in their own right. He felt his work is done. You know? Everything fine. He was ready to go. And he was in just a few months of making a nice exit and living the life of a sadhu that he thought when he was young, and when he had started that ashram, that was going to be his life. And Swami Chinmayananda kind of pulled him out of that, you know. Oops. I might be able to handle it. Because I want to finish the story. Swami Chinmayananda, which time do I only have a few minutes anyway. Swami Chinmayananda, his guru, called him out because he had had a heart attack and he needed Swamiji to do some things for him, right? And so he got pulled out and lived the rest of his life doing all of these things, giving, you know, these tons of courses. How many courses did he give? It's just in 3-year courses, it's amazing to even think of. And then he felt, it is all complete, I've done it, you know. So he was done, he was ready, and to just live a quiet life up in Rishikesh. And then some of his devotees asked him to get involved in this AIM for Seva, this AIM All India Movement for Seva, to help all of the villages to reestablish Hinduism, you know, to give all of the villages, all of the tribes to give them water, sewer, hospital, and to make them be independent by helping them with their trade so that they would be able to afford to remain Hindus, and because the Christians would come in and pay them to become Christians. And the Muslims, so much conversion going on there. And so this All India Movement, what was something that they wanted to do, and they wanted Swamiji to lead it. And Swamiji was totally done until they asked him to do this. And he never even believed in doing anything like this. He was totally just committed to being a sadhu and teaching, which is the teaching, contemplation, you know, satsanga. That is the life of a sannyasi. And he always was very definite about that. But now this aim for seva came, and he found himself saying yes. And he heard himself, he told me, he heard himself saying yes. And he felt an energy rising to do it. He was shocked. And then, you know, for the next, what Swamiji lived to be, I think 84, I think, for the next entire rest of his life, besides continuing to run the courses, he ran this aim for seva. And it was Bhagavan's icha, really, because it established, you know, it established Hinduism as much as could possibly be established, which holds this vision. Which holds this vision. So that was Swamiji's shock. And it took him through the rest of his life. And when you look at it in terms of Ishwara, because Swamiji is the one who brought this pramana forward and gave new life to the Upanishads and the Upanishad pramana, but then the whole Hindu, the Vedic culture needed to be strengthened to be able to protect that and hold it. So Ishwar gave us this great favor, this great boon. Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat. Om Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamidam.
Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.